Welcome to Talking to America. Our guest today is Craig Roberts. Our subject is martial law in America. Craig is well qualified to talk about this subject. He has been a Marine sniper, career police officer. He's had 30 years total service as an infantry and intelligence officer. He retired his rank of Lieutenant Colonel in the Army Reserve. Craig is also the contributing writer for newswithviews.com, an author of The Medusa File, Crimes and Cover-ups of the U.S. Government, Kill Zone, A Sniper's Look at Daily Plaza, and One Shot, One Kill, America's Combat Snipers, among others. Craig, would you like to tell people about your books and where they can get them?
Well, The Medusa File and Kill Zone are available at any bookstore if you want to order them, or you can just go straight to my website where it tells a little bit about all the books that I've written at, of course, the three W's, riflewarrior.com. That's R-I-F-L-E, as in gun, and warrior, W-A-R-R-I-O-R, as in soldier, and it's all one word, riflewarrior.com.
Could you take just a moment and tell us a little bit about the Medusa File?
Okay, the Medusa File started several years ago when I got interested in the Kennedy assassination, and as a Marine sniper, I was down in Dealey Plaza one day for a law enforcement convention nearby and decided to visit the place and immediately saw, after I got up into the Texas School Book Depository, that Oswald couldn't have made the shots that he was credited of making from that position using, and I couldn't have made them myself using the modern equipment we had at the time. In fact, I've tried to reenact it several times, even on television. And I could get close to 5.6 seconds, but not real close. But the thing is, if they lied to me about this, if they lied to us about the assassination of Kennedy being the government, what else have they lied to us about? What else have they covered up through history? So I started looking at all kinds of different case histories from World War II all the way up to present. And I was one of the investigators in the Oklahoma City bombing case, and that was one of the cases that I worked where I saw that they were covering up a lot of people that were involved in this, the John Does, and they refused to look in the direction of the people who really did it and went chasing ghosts instead just so they could generate a lot of paperwork and say, look at the great investigation we did. It was almost a blueprint copy of the investigation of the assassination of Kennedy in Dallas. Lee Harvey Oswald, Lee Harvey McVeigh, basically. But the other cases that I worked all involved some type of cover-up, some type of conspiracy, all documented, no theory. I don't do conspiracy theory. I expose cases that actually happen. And the Medusa File is a collection of those cases that start at World War II and go all the way up through TWA 800.
A book everyone should read, obviously. Craig, you know, you're a former tactical intelligence analyst. What do you see happening to the country these days with the threat of terrorism domestically and abroad?
Thing that you have to understand as an intelligence analyst is that what we do is we take bits and pieces of the puzzle, things that come in, bits and pieces of different types of information, we put them on the wall and we see what kind of picture it forms. You know, Wellington, who was at Waterloo, said he spent his entire life wondering what the fellow on the other side of the hill was up to. That's basically what military intelligence is about, is trying to figure out what the other guy's up to, what he's got, what he intends to do, and if he has the capability of doing it. Well, if we look around today, and we look over the last two decades, we have seen such a change occur in this country and to our Constitution and to our laws and to our government than the most significant changes since 1776. And that you know, the Homeland Defense thing, the TSA at the airports, all kinds of things have happened, all of the different gun laws that have come down the pike, all the things that happened due to what I call a barbarian at the gate. That means the fear factor. You can't generate a law. You can't make people go along with things they don't want to go along with unless they're afraid of something. Then they'll go along with it. You know, the old thing of if you scare them, they'll give up their rights for more security. It's the Hegelian effect. Well, I've seen that happen over and over. In 1995, I testified before Congress, and we were trying to fight the Omnibus Crime Control Act of 1995 or 1996 when it became an act. Because of all the ridiculous stuff that was in it. That's the one where they reduced the size of the magazines to 10 rounds, and you couldn't have a bayonet. You know, like there's a lot of bayonet charges going on with the criminals element. It was ridiculous what they were trying to do. We were trying to fight against that as the Law Enforcement Alliance of America, of uniformed police officers that went to Washington to testify before Congress. I specifically testified because of people on the committee, such as Charles Schumer and some of the other anti-gunners. What I was seeing at the time was incrementalism. Now, incrementalism is where they come in and they say, okay, we can't go in and disarm America, but we can sure reduce the firepower of the peasants. We'll take away certain kinds of guns. We'll take away the ability to get them. We'll take away certain types of ammunition. And so what they do is they start outlawing things by demonizing them, the Saturday Night Special, the dreaded assault rifle, and the sawed-off shotgun. And, you know, they go on and on. Eventually it would be the preferred weapon of assassins, the .22. So where does it stop? Well, it stops when they disarm the country. This movement was going on, so let's put that piece up on the wall. But at the same time, we run into the situation later where we have all of a sudden a new threat, domestic terrorism. That happened 2 weeks after I got back from Congress. We have domestic terrorism, and domestic terrorism in Oklahoma City, of all places. Why Oklahoma City? Well, because it's heartland America. I used to teach counterterrorism, and one of the topics I talked about was targets. Now, there's only five types of targets on land-based terrorism. That's a public building, a private building, mass transportation air, mass transportation ground, and a large gathering of people. Now, basically what that means is it scares us wherever we go. If we go to one of those places, if we fly an airplane, that's mass transportation air. If we take a Amtrak, that's mass transportation ground, or the subway system. If we're in a post office or a federal building, that is a public building. If we're in an office building, that's a private building. If we're at a stadium or in a small town or any kind of large group of people, there's your large body of people. We have had attacks on all five of those things during the Clinton administration, and each time it passed new laws. We had Oklahoma City was a public building. The World Trade Center bombing in 1993 was a private building. Downtown New York City, backyard of ABC, NBC, and CBS, a lot of smoke, a lot of blood, a lot of publicity. We had TW-800, which was shot down. It didn't fall out of the sky because it decided to blow up one day. So there's mass transportation air. We have now a large gathering of people. It could be in a village or it could be in another big building, such as the World Trade Center. The mass transportation ground, Amtrak derailment in Hyder, Arizona. They just didn't play that one up as much as they thought they would because we got involved in the case and we figured out who was behind it and the whole thing went away. That story, by the way, is in the book The Medusa File. So we have all five targets. That means you and I and the public citizenry out here, we can't go anyplace without a threat occurring. So to deal with this threat, let's pass more laws. One of the things about Oklahoma City was they said, look, we got domestic terrorism. We got to pass more gun laws. Well, there wasn't any guns used at Oklahoma City, but any excuse to try to get things by. We had that happen. So now we've got another situation happening where we have disarmed the military. The Clintons basically destroyed the military as we knew it because of the way they handled the military and reduced the budget and closed bases and put aircraft and ships in mothballs and reduced the force structure and reduced the number of divisions and so on and so forth. There wasn't a whole lot left by the time George Bush came by here in this decade. And so what was left all of a sudden was sent overseas, to the point where we're now using up the National Guard, we're now using up the reserves, and the active duty is completely committed. You're looking at Iraq, you're looking at Afghanistan, South Korea, the Philippines, South America. I mean, we've got troops all over the world, Bosnia, Kosovo, UN missions and stuff. We've got troops all over the world, but we don't have anybody here at home, guarding the chickens. And at the same time, we've got a wide-open southwest border. Now, one of the things that the military is responsible for is security of the nation. And securing the nation also means securing the boundaries. And there's no violation of posse comitatus to put U.S. troops on our borders to protect us. That's their mission. That's the primary mission. Running around on all these other countries overseas, you can argue for or against it. But the bottom line is we took all of our assets and resources and they're gone. They're not here anymore. When we had the hurricane, Katrina, in New Orleans, they had to call in the 82nd Airborne out of Fort Bragg prior to them leaving for Iraq. I don't know if they're going to Iraq or not, but usually it's a rotational deal. They probably will, or they'll go someplace. The thing about it is they're the only ones left at home, other than a few units here and there, small units, some Air Force guys and, some Navy guys and stuff. But most people are gone. That leaves us wide open to anything. Now, let's put that all those pieces I just gave you on the wall, and then let's add another element. We have China. China has grown to be tremendously powerful militarily, and they've developed the biggest merchant marine in the world, the biggest means of transporting troops, equipment, and supplies worldwide through their state-run merchant marine, which is COSCO. That's the China Ocean Shipping Company, and one of their front companies, Hutchinson Whampoa. You can look those up on the Internet. They have established the largest ocean transshipment port in the world at Freeport in the Bahamas, right off our coast of Florida. They have taken over control of the Panama Canal. They have established warehouses in Mexico, in the United States, and in Canada. And we don't know what comes in all the sea lift containers that are brought in because there's so many that come in. And we know that they intercepted in Long Beach, California, several years ago, a sea lift container, which is the size of a semi-truck, and it was full of Chinese military automatic weapons and arms and all kinds of stuff. Machine guns and so on. And the cover story was they were being smuggled into street gangs in Los Angeles. And we know that's not true. We don't know where they were going, and we don't know how many of these shipments came in, but we do know they did come in. So let's put that piece on the wall. We've got China that's basically pretty much surrounded us. And if you go to newswithviews.com, I've got an article there on that called How Well Do You Speak Chinese? We know that the Orientals have been seen in Mexican Army uniforms on the border by our own Border Patrol in Arizona, driving Mexican Army Humvees. We know that Mexican troops, federales, have crossed the border on probing missions and recently shot at some news photographers that were down there trying to take pictures of them on our side of the border. We're getting these border incursions all the time. It's not being reported. It's not being covered by the media. If we go to Washington and ask questions of our politicians, or specifically the White House, how come we don't shut down the southern border, it's deadly silence. They don't even want to talk about it. I was told it's because of the political situation of they don't want to lose the Hispanic vote in this country. Well, most of the people that come across the border aren't registered voters. They don't vote. So that issue doesn't fly. So we have all of these things that have stacked up around us. Now let's throw one more piece in the puzzle. Several years ago, about 8 or 9 years ago, my nephew was at the CASQ class at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and that's an officer's command and staff college type class. Their graduation speaker, when they graduated, was a general that flew in from the Pentagon, and he made the statement during his speech that with the build down of our armed forces as they are, should we become involved in a two or more overseas fronts or conflicts, we will not have enough assets and resources at home. It should a national emergency break out here. Should a national emergency be declared in the United States, we'll be forced to call upon foreign assets to patrol our streets. Now, think about that. This is coming from a general in the Army that says the plan is in place and has been for years that we will use UN troops to patrol our streets. That's martial law. Now, what is martial law? Well, people say, well, you really can't do that because of posse comitatus. Well, posse comitatus was passed after the Civil War, and it had to do with the Army not being allowed to enforce civilian law or arrest civilians. In actual fact, they have changed it around a little bit. There was a meeting at Fort Bragg by several JAG officers with a mission of how do we get around posse comitatus about 6 or 7 years ago. And they were in this meeting for a week. And at the end, they said, well, we have ways that we can get around posse comitatus now. By declaring a national emergency is one. Others is if they're called in by the local mayor or governor or something like that and with the permission of the president, then all of a sudden they can be deputized. Now, anybody can be deputized, and all of a sudden you have law enforcement privileges. And how long does it take to train a soldier to be a policeman? You can actually, like on riot duty or something like that, looting and things like that, you can teach them how to apprehend somebody and put the handcuffs on them and turn them over to law enforcement in about 3 or 4 hours. There's no Miranda in a national emergency. There's no Miranda rights. Everything gets suspended. So you really aren't protected from this. The problem is, what happens if these guys happen to be, Russians or Chinese or Yugoslavians or Swedish or whoever that happen to be in here at our request? Now, the Los Angeles riots, we had a situation where we had called Marines up from Camp Pendleton, and they were staged and ready to, at the Rose Bowl, and they were ready to move in to south central Los Angeles if the riot wasn't put under control by the National Guard and the LAPD. As it turned out, I don't think any of them had to go in. I think they held like a perimeter or something, but they really didn't have to go in and have direct contact with the people. This showed that they were willing to do it, that martial law actually was in force to a certain extent if you count the National Guard, which is kind of a gray area because the Guard is actually also the state militia under the command of the governor. But it takes a stroke of a pen to make them federal troops by the White House. So when it comes to posse comitatus and using that as a reason or an excuse that says you can't use military personnel, there's all kinds of ways to get around that. And also, posse comitatus doesn't cover the Air Force, the Navy, or the Marine Corps. It only says the United States Army. So when you get into that area, it's real iffy, and there's so many ways to get around it that it's really an irrelevant issue in any case where there's a large national emergency. Now, Henry Kissinger said right after the Los Angeles riots, and I don't know, he's at some meeting someplace, and he had mentioned or stated to the effect that, you know, today you couldn't bring foreign troops into this country. You know, the American people wouldn't stand for it, but the time will come where they will be welcomed in with open arms. Now, that's kind of a scary thought when you have, let's say, an outbreak of bird flu, and all of a sudden they start quarantining parts of the country, but they don't have anybody here to enforce the quarantine, so they go to the United Nations because it's a global health issue now, and they call in foreign troops. Now, Aaron, there's people out here that said, you know, you're crazy. That could never happen here. Well, it has happened here. We've had a lot of foreign troops here already. During 9/11, we had Norwegians flying AWACS over the United States because all our guys were overseas. We have, we've been training Russian, Yugoslavian, Hungarian, and, you know, several of the Baltic nations. We've been training their troops at Fort Polk under an operation called Cooperative Nugget. I don't know if it's still ongoing, but it was a few years ago, where we were training them house-to-house search and seizure in what we call a MOUT site, which is M-O-U-T for military operations in urban terrain, in a town that looks just like downtown America with ranch-style homes, storefronts, you know, sewers, schools, church, the whole bit. And then they were going home training their own people how to do this. This is stuff that's actually happened. This is documented. You look it up on the Internet, don't believe me stuff. So where's all this going? Right now, we've been told that two things. One, it's not if but when there will be another massive terrorist attack. And two, there's a bird flu pandemic headed this direction. Get ready for it, and if so, we're going to be dealing with a national emergency, quarantine, et cetera, and only the military will be able to handle it. Now, this is what they've already said last week. Only the military will be able to handle this when it comes up, and I'm thinking, what can the military do in an influenza epidemic other than, you know, transport people, transport medications, or confine you and hold quarantine?
You're listening to Talking to America with our guest, Craig Roberts. Here once again is your host, Aaron Zellman.
Well, Craig, tell us about China's presence in this hemisphere, and who is it that's paying them to be here?
Well, interestingly enough, it's the American people. We're paying the bills, and we do it by all the Chinese products we buy. We do it every time we go to Walmart. I mean, we went to a craft shop in northern Arkansas in the Ozark Mountains a few weeks ago, and we stopped in this little roadside craft shop thinking that there'll be local crafts in here. We walked in, and everything I turned over in the bottom said made in China. So it seems like everything, go to your store, it seems like everything that's not a food item appears to be made in China. Not the People's Republic of China, but Communist China. I guess that's the same thing. It's not Taiwan anyway, it's Communist China. And they're getting billions and billions of dollars. Now just multiply that by the number of countries out here that they're supplying things to. And it's incredible. If you buy machine tools now, almost all the machine tools you buy, such as lathes and milling machines and drill presses and so on, are made in China. If you buy, there's places like Harbor Freight, 99% of the stuff in there is made in China. And it just goes on and on and on. So we're really sending a whole lot of money over there that they are in tune, in turn, and you've got to remember how China works. Everything goes to the government, and the government supports one entity, and that's the Army, the People's Liberation Army, the PLA. Even the Navy is owned by the Army. That's called PLAN, P-L-A-N, the People's Liberation Army Navy. So we send all this money over there in in commerce, and then they turn around and turn it into military equipment. And let's jump into another area. We've also given them the technology to do stuff to us. During the Clinton administration, they received all kinds of information on developing nuclear warheads. We then turned around and let L'Oreal give them or sell them the technology to launch satellites, communication satellites. Well, if you can launch a communication satellite, you can launch a nuclear warhead. And then Hughes gave them guidance systems and missile technology, or sold it to them. So they had everything it took to create an intercontinental ballistic missile, and it wasn't a year before they had already done their test and told us that they had the capability of sending nuclear missiles to the West Coast. Well, a little bit bigger missile, and you can hit any place in the United States. And if you go over the pole, you can hit any place in the United States. So, you know, a lot of people, they look at the globe and they think, okay, this is how far it is from the United States to Russia, and they run their finger around the globe. Well, you have to think three-dimensional. Turn it up on end and look at the North Pole, and it's not very far to Russia from our northern border. Just right over the pole, and boom, you're there. And the reverse is also true. If you were going to invade the United States from Russia, you would come over the pole. You wouldn't fly across the Atlantic or the Pacific. That's why we had NORAD on the north and the dew line and all that stuff back during the Cold War. So, yes, we're the ones giving them the technology. Then we're paying them all this money to increase the size of their military, build bigger ships. China right now is building landing craft at a tremendous rate, and we keep saying, well, it's to invade Taiwan. Well, you don't need all of the stuff that they're assembling to invade one or two little old islands out there. You're looking at something a lot more significant than that. You're looking at a major operation on a major coastline. These people are planning not years ahead, but decades ahead, and they've been planning things for a long time. To understand the Chinese military mentality, it would behoove one to read Sun Tzu's Art of War, because there's so many things in there, and that's the way they think, that there's so many ways to attack or defend in the Chinese and the Asian form of mind that is totally different than the way we do things. We, you know, we're more reactionary. They bomb Pearl Harbor, so we go to war. Their thing is, if they're going to go someplace and do something, they plan it years in advance. They put spies ashore. They make inroads. They make political inroads. They make economic inroads. And then they learn everything they can that we've got, all of our strengths and weaknesses, and they set up a whole chessboard before they make the first move. That's a scary thought. That is out there, and it's looking at us right now. We have open borders. We've got the possibility of a small mini nuke going off in this country. We've been told that they're here. We've been told about the biological threats. We've been told about bird flu. We've got hurricanes, like, you know, a rate we've never seen before. There's so many different things that could create a scenario in which we have to call in foreign assets, as this general had mentioned.
Craig, do you think there's a discernible difference as to what might give some pause to our enemies about sending their troops to American soil?
Any foreign nation that contemplates going into another nation weighs the resistance. They weigh what capabilities that nation's military is, and they have to also take into account, does the citizenry have the capability to resist us as well? Would they resist us, and do they have the means to resist us? China invaded Vietnam, I think it was in 1979, and got soundly trounced and had to pull out of the country because of the resistance they ran into, because everybody had guns. We are the last nation in the world that has an armed citizenry. The only thing that stands in the way of any evil intent by any other country is the fact that of millions and millions of Americans happen to be armed. The Second Amendment is the only thing, because we don't have a military left anymore, and what we do have left isn't home. And so the only defense we've got in this country right now, other than a few police officers and a few small military units and guard units here and there, is the Second Amendment, the armed citizen. What every nation fears is going into a country and finding out that they have the capability of being the French Resistance or the Viet Cong or so on and so forth. And we have that capability. If we get disarmed, if we give up weapons, if we go the route of Australia, New Zealand, England, and Canada, then we're doomed. There's no way that we can protect ourselves, our country, or our rights.
You know, it's easy to say, okay, we're going to defend ourselves against the enemy. But my experience, Craig, has been that there's an awful lot of gun owners out there who are all talk. They're not going to take a stand. And I just tell them if you think I'm right or wrong.
No, you're absolutely correct. But we have to remember that what was the figures? The American Revolution was fought by 17% of the population, and 23% went with the enemy as Tories. You know, there's here's the problem we've got, is there are people out here that know how to fight and will fight. There's a lot of combat veterans out here. There's a lot of people who you know, when it comes to their neighborhood, they're gonna be the guy in the movie Patriot. But the problem is they're all getting older. Your Vietnam generation's in the 50s and 60s now. You know, we're dying off. The kids that are over in Iraq are now, well, we don't know what they're going to do because we don't know how they were brought up in their value system. The weakest point we have is the public school system. The government controls schools. They keep harping to the younger generations that guns are evil, guns are bad, you shouldn't have them. You don't need them. The government will take care of you. The police will take care of you. If you have a problem, dial 911. If your parents have guns, maybe that's a dangerous situation and you should report it. I mean, Hitler said, you know, give me the minds of the youth and I don't care what happens to you because they'll be in my camp and you'll be gone someday, in so many words. If you read my book, Killzone, I've got the whole quote in there. So, yes, you're exactly right. And we've got too many people. We got too few who would stand and fight. And of those, we're getting older and we're going to be gone someday and there won't be anybody left to do it. So I think a lot of it on the other side is they're just waiting for a lot of this to happen. They're letting people go. The World War II generation's incapable because of age factor and dying at 1,000 a day. The Korean War guys are right behind them. And us Vietnam guys, we're right behind them. Who's going to pick up the flag? I don't know, and I wish I had the answer to that question, Aaron.
We all do. Craig, why don't you tell us again about your books, where people can get them, and your website?
Okay, the website is riflewarrior.com. Rifle isn't gun. Warrior isn't soldier.com. All the books are there. Some are New York City publishers, mainstream, that you have to go to the bookstore and get. The Consolidated Press books are available through the website. And you can also just, you know, send a check and write to the address at the bottom of the website to order either Killzone or the Medusa File or Doorway to Hell, Disaster in Somalia. Those are the three books that we have in stock.
Craig, I want to thank you very much for being our guest today. This has been Talking to America. I've been your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest has been Craig Roberts, talking about the martial law in America. And I want to remind all of you, if you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talking to America is a production of JPFO.org.